Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Howdy, Adam here from Peak Design. We make backpacks, pouches, phone cases, the kind of stuff that you use every day of your life. And guess what? Our bags are fair trade certified, guaranteed for life, and really well made. So here's my offer. If you find a Peak Design product you like, get it for 20% off. Visit peakdesign.com/podcast. That's P-E-A-K design.com/podcast for 20% off your first Peak Design order. Thanks for checking us out.
Hello.
Bonjour.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of The Juice. I'm your host, Solomon Giorgio, comedian, writer, the lion, the witch, and the wardrobe. Today's guest is an absolutely hilarious comedian and father of two who can be seen regularly on the late night shows. The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, The Late Show with Seth Meyers, and The Late Late Show with James Corden. He also breaks down the strange and upside down news of the world every week in his podcast from the Exactly Right podcast network, Bananas. And he has a brand new special out now called Perfectly Stupid. Let's give a big, juicy welcome to Kurt Bronneler. Hi, Kurt. How are you?
Hello, Solomon.
I love having to do that. Even though we chatted right before, I love having to start over in a conversation, just saying hi.
to start presentationally. Yes. And now we will begin with the presentation of the hellos.
It's my attempt at a radio voice. It's the best I can offer.
There are certain podcasts that I listen to that they have one version of it that's like the presentational format.
Yes.
And then they have another one like discussing that format. And the discussing that format, I prefer that dude's voice so much more than when he's just like, and then here it comes, the danger. You know, it's just like so, so intense.
It's the monster truck rally voice.
Yeah.
Admission gets you the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge.
Sunday in the mud.
Oh, man. How have you been?
I'm good.
Because you're in New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
Which part of New Jersey?
Neptune. So just outside Asbury Park.
Okay, so it's a nicer part because I've been to South Jersey and that is not the nice part.
Well, Atlantic City is definitely not the nice part. And I kind of like the Pine Barrens. The Pine Barrens are crazy.
Okay. Jersey is as small of a state as it is. The landscape differs wildly from one part to the next.
It's really insane. And also this place, the Pine Barrens, is the largest national park on the East Coast and nobody knows about it. No one. It literally sits in between Philly and Atlantic City. And just no one's aware that it exists.
Yeah. I feel like people just like to dogpile on Jersey as a state. Was that something that you had to grow up with as well?
Oh, it's all the time. And I don't mind. I don't mind. Stay away. If you think Jersey sucks, stay away. Please do. It's already incredibly crowded. we don't need any more people.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of New York is moving there now because it's... Like people always lived in like Jersey City or like across the water at one point or another and pretended to live in New York.
No. New York is the cocoon and then you become the butterfly in New Jersey. It's the cycle of life. And then you die. And then you die in Jersey. and your wings feed the next the next round of caterpillars.
So what is Neptune like? Like, is it like a smaller city or like one of, I have no idea.
It's just like a straight up suburb. Neptune itself was a little bit, it was kind of the quote unquote wrong side of tracks for like that area. Mm-hmm. And then Asbury was also like that as well. Cause I used to live in Asbury as well. And Asbury was this fascinating place where it used to be in the, like from the 30s to the 50s was this like mecca, like the Rat Pack would go down there. And like they had like all these like four movie theaters in like a 16 block radius, you know, and like all like the major department stores were there. And then it just had a big economic crash in the 70s. And it was essentially abandoned. It was like very empty until like around like the 2000s or so. And then it started like businesses, speaking about businesses, like businesses started coming back. And now it's kind of like got a thing again. But it still has like this abandoned casino on the boardwalk that's just a series of broken pieces of glass. And it's just like a husk of what it used to be. Yes. That's what's kind of crazy about it. It's like, it's this husk of former glory, which is how I feel about Jersey in general. And that's kind of like what I love about it.
Cause Neptune is a glorious name of a city. I can only imagine that it was, it has to be glorious at one point. Let's you don't just name something Neptune and just walk away.
He is the king of the sea.
Like you have
but
to.
It's not even on the ocean. That's the best part. It's like,
yeah, it's aspirational is what it is.
It's by a dirty river. And so you can get to the ocean, but you need to travel the river first.
I respect that. So like growing up there, would you say it's a very like a lot of rumor mills going on throughout your childhood?
I'm trying to think if it was there, you know, as a kid, there was like my mom was a pediatric nurse, you know, and nurses' schedules are very erratic. So sometimes she wouldn't be home until kind of like late at night. And when those would happen as a child, I would go to Mrs. Kelly's house. And Mrs. Kelly ran, I guess, a daycare at her house, but it was also where she lived. And also her kids were there as well.
Ah.
And so I would get like dropped off there. And that felt like a big rumor mill because it was just her backyard. There was no like structure to the time. It was just like, we're in the backyard for 4 hours alone.
Just like, I grew up mostly in the 80s. And I think, just loose children in a backyard was kind of my whole childhood as well.
Yeah. And also, and now being a parent is fascinating to like, I want to get back to this idea of like, just go out and come home when it's dark. Primarily because I want the free time. But
that's an impossible dream right now.
There's too many podcasts. There's too many podcasts about like the one child abduction that happens, you know. And it's like, usually the child abductions are by people who know the kid. That's the norm.
I think also a lot of people are having less children.
Yes.
I think we're from a generation. I'm from a big family. I think you're from a big family too.
Yeah.
And I think at that point, if the kid gets abducted, like, okay.
right. When you had seven kids.
Yeah.
It was like, well, we still have six.
Yeah, I feel like one or two, you have to keep track.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's when you chip them because you're like, if you lose this one, people know.
I'll totally chip a kid. I'd chip a kid.
You can't. But you had like, your kids were in like, you had pandemic, like, was that a big shift? Because my nephew was born in the midst of the pandemic and he was, acclimating was weird.
it was really, really intense for primarily the first 6 months because the first 6 months we didn't have any daycare whatsoever and school didn't exist. And my son just didn't sleep. He did not sleep at all.
Oh.
So he was 6 months when we went into the pandemic and then he did not sleep for like a year. And so we were just like sleep deprived. Going crazy and with the kids at all times and no money coming in. And it was just like, I was real every day of panic.
Yeah, it sounds like that's a psychosis causer.
It was really, really intense.
Fever dreams. I was just by myself.
I mean, like that and like our pandemics were so radically different. I was never ever alone. And I would have switched places with you in an instant.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure the flip of like just being around people would have been really nice.
Oh, I just started talking out loud. Because I figured it'd be fully psycho just to be a person not saying anything.
Yeah.
Like, there was a part of me that like somebody started filming me right now and it's just me not saying anything for hours. That's just even more terrifying.
And I remember, because I actually saw you, it seems like on a regular-ish basis during the pandemic because of you did hot tub so many times.
Yeah, that was fun. It was helpful. But also, I think truly the saddest experience is doing a comedy show and then slowly closing your laptop and being
It is the saddest. Because especially you would have like headphones on and like people would be talking and everything. And then the moment you take the headphones off and it's just dead silence.
Exactly. Like I would go to the bathroom during the show. I'm like, oh. It's just me.
It was so upsetting. It's so upsetting.
Because like I'm trying to remember, like when I do like talking about this aspect in comedy, because you were improv first or before you went into stand-up?
Yeah, or I did improv for like 7 years before I started doing stand-up.
Oh, gee, that's a big shift.
It's a long time. I honestly was like obsessed with improv, and I was like, well, this is it. I was like hook, line, and sinker. I was like in the church.
Yeah, I'm very impressed by it because I think I started with improv and I'm very bad at committing to characters and you are much better than I am.
But honestly, I never would really do characters. I would just be talking as me. And I was like, why the fuck wasn't I doing stand-up? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what I wanted to be actually doing.
You still did the work.
I did a lot of, I placed my glass here and I'll remember where it was when I pick it up later. Like, that matters.
Did you do the open mic scene in New York as well?
I never did an open mic scene.
Good.
I started Hot Tub when I started writing. So I always had a place that I could go every week and try new material.
It's not worth it.
I've been to open mics. They're just so dark and brutal.
At open mics, we'd have insane people just show up, but they would do stuff. Like I had a guy named Information Gangster. And
where was this? Were you coming up in
Seattle,
New York?
This is Seattle. He would just like the most insane thing. He would truly just pull out an index card and he'd point out that this is the average size of the human male foreskin. And then they cut it off. And then he.
Wait a second. This guy thinks that an index card is the amount of foreskin that was removed.
And then he would start, he'd look at the audience like, how do you feel if somebody took that off? And it was so uncomfortable. But I, of course, was holding back every ounce of laughter. Because the room is there what is that for early improv? Is there like a person that's like just makes everybody just like uncomfortable?
Oh yeah, it's called the majority of improv. I also was a teacher, so I taught level one.
Oh.
And so you would always have those people who were like there for definitively the wrong reasons. And it would usually be an older man who would like join the class because there's like young women in the class. And he was just like this like delicate tight, as a teacher, like delicate tightrope, because like, they're a paying student and you have to like, but you also have to protect all these other students as well. And so like, I would immediately nip it in the butt if it was ever overt, but then it would always just be these teeny little microaggression shit things where you're just like, and it's just like finding new and different ways to be like, you can't do that. Don't do that without just being like, that sucked. Cause you can never say that sucked as a teacher.
Oh, gosh, I would happily say that. That's why I'm not a teacher.
I think that there were a bunch of improv teachers who would be like, that sucked. I was like very much like, I can't do that. These are people who are trying.
Like, was there anybody that would like bring a character up over and over again that was truly despised?
So many of them. Because also this was like, you know, early 2000s. Yeah. I remember like there's things that were happening on stage routinely that now everyone would have gotten canceled. It's fascinating that it was just not that long ago.
It really wasn't. I started in 2007 and I could not imagine anything that I did my first year being allowed ever again.
Yeah, for real. I mean, I remember some of like Kristen and I's sketches that we were like, this is just like, we're being funny. And we're just like, oh, we cannot do these ever again.
Let them disappear. And you know what? It's fine. Growth is important.
Growth is important, guys. Growth is important.
Wait, I'm assuming you also had a bunch of awful jobs along the way.
I did. My first job in New York City was I worked at a cafe. Like just selling coffee, and I could not even pay my rent. And my rent was $500 a month. And so I quickly quit the cafe and I got a job at a TV production company, but it was weirdly too close to what I wanted to be doing.
Yeah.
And I quit because I wanted to have a job I hated that wouldn't get me anywhere so that I would have to make comedy work.
Same. I did that same. Yeah. I was working a corporate job. It wasn't along the same industry, but it was like one of those things like I'm making money. I'm going up the ladder. where I was like, I'm going to be unhappy. I'm working 50 hours a week. I'd rather be broke. And so, yeah, I went back to serving. Was like, this is a job that can't hurt me and I can't improve upon. So,
yeah. A place saw my resume and I had put, this is like 2000, and I'd put HTML as one of my skills because I had a basic understanding of HTML. And they're like, will you come in and oversee the project of making our website? And I was like, of course I will. And it was a temp agency. So I worked at a staffing agency. And after the web project was done, I essentially just went out and hired a company to do the project, which is like so crazy. It's like, why is this position even available? And then they're like, would you like to stay on and just fix our computers? And I was like, I'd love to. And I majored in English and philosophy. I know nothing about computers. But I could Yahoo answers to things because this was pre-Google.
So you conned your way into an IT job?
And then I slowly moved further and further away so people couldn't see what I was doing until I moved into the computer room. So I essentially had my own office and I would just be in there. No one could see my computer screens and I would just write comedy.
Of course.
All day, every day. I literally every day did 10 to 15 minutes of actual work for that company.
That
it was amazing.
I'm proud of you. I'm jealous. I'm manipulated a lot of ways to get into, like, I worked in bars and stuff and like definitely tried my least amount of effort to get money while focusing on stand-up. That's an art. That's a masterpiece. That is.
and then I would just close the door and no one would know if I was there or not. And I would just sleep on the floor. It was amazing. And then I convinced them that they needed to do video interviews and put them online. This isn't like 2002 or something when video is like impossible to have online. So I convinced them to buy like a $6,000 camera and then I would use it to shoot sketches. And then one day I was riding with the camera in my backpack. I was riding my bike through Brooklyn and a dude doored me and I flipped off my bike, landed on the camera, broke the camera physically in half. And then I just put it back in the box and put the box kind of in the corner. And I was the only one who ever touched the camera, so no one ever knew.
Kurt, you were already a bit of my hero, and now your place there has been solidified. Okay, Kurt, it is now time to read a couple of the juicy submissions we get from our listeners. It is mailbag time. We're going to move on to the mailbag. These are listener submissions, and we're going to rate them as well.
Okay.
I'll give you the rating scale. So after each letter, we're going to rate it based off of juice level. There's dry, being boring, moist, slightly tantalizing, and fully juiced, salacious to the upteenth level.
Okay.
And here is the first submission.
All right, I'm ready.
I grew up in a small town where everybody knows most things about everybody. My mom, grandma, and great-grandma all grew up in the same town and went to the same high school as me. I had a teacher, let's call him Mr. Smith. He wasn't a good teacher. We watched a lot of movies about serial killers. After a few weeks, I noticed that he was always hanging out with another teacher I had. Let's call her Miss Johnson. I regularly saw him flirting in the hallways. I casually mentioned all the flirting to my mom one day, thinking it was just fun gossip. She was floored. Turns out Mr. Smith was my mom's best friend's husband's brother. He was married.
Whoa.
Everyone suspected he was having an affair, but they weren't sure. I had unwittingly discovered the affair partner. I went to class the next day and told Mr. Smith that I had found out that his sister-in-law was my mom's best friend and that it was so funny that the town we lived in was so small. Every time I saw Mr. Smith and Miss Johnson together, I gave them a big knowing smile. Mr. Smith and his wife got divorced and I got an A in the class.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, sometimes a person who lets out the secret is releases you.
Right. Now, once it's like, because secrets, they bind us.
Oh, yeah.
They bind us. And that's why gossip is so great.
Oh, wow. I'm fully juiced.
I'm fully juiced.
Just to gossip and catch somebody that's cheating, that's...
Yeah. Because it's always like an assumption or you're like, I think something's going on. And then to actually have a beautiful confirmation is it makes the juice. Yeah. It makes the juice
My teachers are hooking up. Well, one of them is married. I'm like, oh, Thank you. What a relief.
Did you ever see any inter-teacher hookups?
We had two science teachers hook up, but they were both pretty mean, so no one was invested. Like, whether or not they were married, it didn't bother any of us. It's like, whoever their spouses were, hopefully they're free.
I had this one teacher, who was an English teacher named Mr. Smith, I think.
Yeah.
He would wear orange-tinted regular glasses. So his regular, like, eyeglasses were orange-tinted, big, like aviator-style regular glasses, and would chain smoke out the door of the class so that as you were coming in, he was in the... with the door propped open, smoking. And then he would, like, to start class, like, throw his cigarette out, close the door, and start class. And there was a rumor that he had been in Nam and he had been affected by Agent Orange, and that's why he had to wear the orange-tinted glasses. But I was just thinking about it the other day, that that makes so little sense. It's just the word orange.
I love that we had one math teacher. He had so much chalk in his hand. But he'd also pull his wedgie. So every time you got to class, you just wait for him to turn around and see just a giant mark of chalk dust right center of his butt.
Oh, because he would, you could see where he is. Oh, no. Yes. Oh, no. And that's something he'll never, ever know.
And he always wore dark pants.
I had, so I went to an all-boys Catholic school. And so I had brothers teaching half the classes.
Really?
They were you know, essentially monks, and they were all the worst teachers because they were not, like, they didn't have a calling to education. Yeah. They had a calling to, like, just be monks or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they were, like, forced to teach. And one of this guy named Brother John, he taught Latin. Which I took, for some reason, I took 4 years of Latin. I know no Latin because he wouldn't let you hold a pen during class. He wouldn't let you take notes. He thought it would be better if you just, like, paid attention. And it was so insane. And he was a real fucking pervert. Uh-huh. And he would always talk about, like, his little niece's cupcake breasts. It was upsetting and disturbing. And I remember one day a kid picked up a pen during his class, and he told him to put the pen down. Yeah. And he grabbed the pen and threw it, and then the kid got mad or something. He hit the kid. Then the kid got up and just punched him. It was so crazy. This was all just like, and everyone was just like cheering, like, yeah!
Of course. Fuck Brother John.
Jeez. Fuck Brother John. I do not endorse violence against educators, but I do endorse violence against Brother John.
Yeah, I don't either. But Brother John, he had it coming.
Brother John had it coming.
So here's the next submission.
Okay.
I am a union iron worker and therefore work with a lot of very unhinged cis men. There were twin brothers. There were twin brothers there who would always have two open unemployment claims going and would alternate days going to work for each other so they could each collect a paycheck and an unemployment check.
Ooh.
They also blew an entire workers' comp settlement on cocaine and Green Bay Packers tickets. It's to be noted that Green Bay is roughly 13 hours from where they live.
That's what they needed the cocaine for, to stay up to get to the Green Bay Packers games.
Look, the things I would do if I had an identical twin, these would not even be on the top of the list. That is, wow. Collect a paycheck. That I would do.
Okay, I'm so confused. So it was one paycheck, but they split it because they would each go to work different days.
One of them had an unemployment and the other one had
work. Oh, I see.
So they were both getting paid and they would just switch back and forth on who would work so they could maintain the unemployment and the paycheck.
Interesting. That's fascinating.
But then I guess, I don't know what the workers' comp settlement is for and how they both got it, but they should have. Honestly, I'm not going to judge anyone for what they blow their money on. Cocaine and Green Bay Packers tickets. I've done worse.
I have as well.
I have done way worse, and I can't be out here judging. So I'm going to give this a moist. I want to know what they're doing now.
There's not enough. I'm going to give it a dry. because I don't get enough details. I want more details on them.
Yeah. I want to know their whole life.
Yes.
I want to know what these twins have gotten away with and the insane dirty deeds they've done. Have they switched roles during sex? I want to see that as well. Because I bet that also happened.
I wonder how often that occurs. I think I dated a twin. Yeah. I dated both of the twins once when I was in sixth grade. And I was dating one of them. But I would always talk to them on the phone. And it was both of them on the phone always. Yes. And their voices sounded identical as well. And then one day we went to a dance. And the other one who I wasn't dating took me aside and said, my sister wants to break up with you. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like a little sad. And she's like, but I would like to date you. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's just like, I think I asked the wrong, I got confused and asked the wrong one out. And like, they were just like sixth graders. So they said yes.
Oh my God. That is...
And so then I just started dating the other one. It was so crazy.
It's like, that's fantastic. And they're exactly identical?
Yeah, they were. I believe their names were the English twins, but I can't be certain. I've tried to look them up and I have not found them.
Reach out. Hey, remember when we dated?
Remember when we dated? That was kind of crazy. What are you like now? Are you crazy or do you have a family?
Have you guys dated the same guy ever since? I just want to know if this is a pattern.
I mean, I think we just held hands. I think that was like the amount that it was at.
Oh, yeah. That's way back when. Oh, that's technically not even. Oh, God. Yeah, that was the curse of being a gay kid and trying not to date girls because they can be like, oh, we had lunch together. So we're boyfriend, girlfriend now. I'm like, oh.
Oh, no.
It's, yeah.
So did you know in sixth grade?
Oh, I knew since I was like nine. I was.
Okay.
Everyone knew since I was.
And when did you come out?
I was 18, but I came out. Okay. I was a very spiteful, vengeful for coming out. I told everybody, and I didn't care.
A vengeful coming out.
It's just spite now. I have like it might not even be real. Who knows? And that's the mailbag. Thank you all so much for sending in your mail. Okay, Kurt, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with the juice line.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network. So whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Howdy, Adam here from Peak Design. We make backpacks, pouches, phone cases, the kind of stuff that you use every day of your life. And guess what? Our bags are fair trade certified, guaranteed for life, and really well made. So here's my offer. If you find a Peak Design product you like, get it for 20% off. Visit peakdesign.com/podcast. That's P-E-A-K design.com/podcast for 20% off your first Peak Design order. Thanks for checking us out.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
Welcome back to The Juice. I'm here with the always entertaining Kurt Bonneler. All right, Kurt, now's the time in our show when we go to the phone. We call it The Juice Line. And I'm hearing from our board operator that today's caller is Kim. Let's patch her in.
Please hold. Thank you.
Hi. Hi, Solomon.
Hi, Kim.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you. Welcome. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Solomon?
I'm very, very good. Well, you know the both of us. I don't have to introduce you.
Hello.
Well, Kim, you have some great gossip, and I clearly, that's obviously, that is my lifeblood. So yeah, whatever you want to start, please go ahead.
Yeah, great. So we'll set the stage. This all starts at a state school in Great Lakes region in a medium-sized city where I went to school mid-2000s.
Okay.
I moved away after graduating, and we make fairly frequent trips back to the city. And on one of these trips, I run into this person we'll call Ace.
Solid pseudonym, thank you.
So Ace is having an art show. It's Art Walk, all of these little shops put up student work, local artists are displayed. And Ace is like, hey, I'm raising funds for Burma. It's like, oh, that's an interesting project. Mm-hmm. Okay, like what is this all about? He's like, yeah, I'm got some stuff about Burma.
What's the age at this point?
We're like early 20s. So, you know, like mid 20s, early 20s.
Okay.
Ace is a couple years younger than I am. I had some art classes with him.
Oh, okay.
My boyfriend at the time, who is now my husband, also just kind of knew him through our friend circles.
Well, you didn't have to brag there, Kim. Okay. That was. But congratulations.
Thank you. So we kind of have overlapping friend circles. We know each other a little bit. We both run into Ace, and Ace is telling us about this trip that he has to Burma. I'm like, wow, good for you. It's impressive. Good luck with that. Bye. Like, I'm not giving you any of my money. Like,
yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
So I find out he's been fundraising for a while for this. He's been selling his art. He's been collecting donations. He's actually had a couple of articles written in the city about himself and this project. And the whole town is kind of falling over themselves about this kid. Oh, he's going to go out and do so much good work and all these good deeds. And they're so proud of him. And, and they're like, oh, these poor brown people who just cannot help themselves. And like, just classic, like, we're not racist. How do you say you're not racist?
Yeah.
But like, oh, we're going to help these brown people.
Yes.
Colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The whole town is going to go out, help these poor brown people who cannot help themselves. And they're going to do it through Ace. And so he's had this like film screening, which probably means he just rented a documentary from the university library and showed it in a study room. You know, and he's an art student, so he has zero geopolitical experience. Yeah, you know, but he is single-handedly going to end the plight of these, you know, human rights atrocities happening across the world, and he's going to bring that awareness back here.
So, okay,
you know. Over this year, like thinking about it, and I bring up his GoFundMe page, but the whole thing is like, all right, I'm going to single-handedly save all these people in Burma, and all you have to do is pay for my airfare, pay for my room and board, pay for my food. Don't worry, I don't eat much. I'm a skinny guy. Don't worry about it. Pay for my art supplies, for a camera, and then anything else that's left over after this trip that I take to document life in Burma, I'm going to bring back, and I'm not going to donate it to a local cause. I'm not going to donate back to Burma. It's going to go to my exhibitions that I'm going to share with all of you.
It is. Oh, look, the writing is on the wall.
Yeah. So, you know, we run into him maybe about a year later. And I'm like, oh, hey, how'd that project go? Are you still fundraising? Is it going well? And he's just kind of like, oh, no. He's like, did you go to Burma? And he kind of like mumbled something and like walked away. And my husband's like elbowing me. And he's like, don't bring it up. Don't talk about that. What? He's like, yeah, he just took the money and he kept it. So this whole town is like, won't talk about it. Everybody's like hushed up about it. I think they're all just so embarrassed because they just were falling all over themselves to, you know, associate themselves with this great work that this great person's going to do for all of us and all of them. And they're like, I don't remember that. I didn't give him any money. That didn't happen. And so like, no one will talk about it. And it's all hushed up. And my husband's like, yeah, don't talk about it. We're not going to talk about that. Like, okay. And so I kind of think about it every once in a while. I'm like, man, what an asshole.
Yeah.
But he just fucked off with the money and all of his artwork has nothing to do with human rights. It's like blobs of paint. And later on, it's just, he sets it on fire. So it's like, you know, your art is not very good if you can only sell it if you set it on fire.
Yeah, you hear that, Banksy?
Wait, so he didn't start, he didn't even have like an exhibition called like The Great Swindle or anything like that, where he like documented how much money and what he actually spent on.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he kind of like disappeared. He just left town with all of the money. He like didn't contact anybody. He's not friends with anybody anymore. He just took the money and ran and like left town.
How much money could this have been? Like, was it $3,000 or something?
Yeah, how much?
Probably at least. I know the Kickstarter failed, and that was like a, you know, 500-ish. So, but also he's been selling work. He's been generating donations. He's been collecting cash. So it was probably a couple $1,000s. And like,
well, you know,
it's not nothing when you're 20, 25, you know, it's a lot of money. Mm-hmm.
That's like 3 months. That was like 5 months worth of rent for me at that time.
Yeah.
That's impressive. But the whole town keeping it a secret, that's always like people not willing to be embarrassed and confront somebody. That's always, I've never had that ability. I'm impressed by it. I'm
like, they're so ashamed of themselves.
Sounds very Catholic.
It is, actually.
Sounds painful. Like, if I get scammed, everyone's going to know, and I'm going to point out the person that did it. I don't care how dumb I look.
So he took off. Yeah. He left. He never went back to the town. Right. When you saw him again, it was like in a different place.
I saw him probably about a year after he didn't take the trip, right? So I saw him, and then about a year later ran into him again, and he hadn't taken the trip. And shortly after that, he disappeared.
That's great. Like, I love it.
First of all, let's talk to your husband about keeping a secret. What's going on over there? Let's have a discussion with your non-confrontational husband about this.
Yeah, like, can't talk about that. If I didn't tell him I was going to come on, I was going to ask him if he remembered, but I knew he was going to like not let me, but he was like, don't talk about that.
Protect Ace at all costs.
No, we can't. I love that.
He said those things. He did those things. Like, I don't have anything to be embarrassed about.
You don't, Kim. Not at all. You have every right to tell me everything. Thank you so much. That's a wonderful tale. That is, you know what? I'm a little proud of Ace. He pulled it off.
I've never known someone who scammed an entire town, but like, he did it.
Yeah. He didn't do it in like a conspicuous way either. It was an obvious scam from jump, and you noticed. And unfortunately, not that many people listen to women of color, so they get what they deserve.
I think the icing on the cake now is that he has a link on one of his social media pages to Ukrainian refugees, like fundraising for Ukrainian refugees.
Oh,
like,
gosh, this.
Oh, that's look, so great. This,
like we found a low-level Coney 2012. And there are probably many out there, but thank you so much for sharing that story.
You're welcome. Thank you for letting me share.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, wow. I've never, like, scamming other people for money, like strangers, that sounds like the scariest thing in the world to do.
Well, also, it's very, you know what? And also, I do know, because I did once do a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Because it was to skywrite How Do I Land in the Sky? And then I raised, it was $4,000 for the skywriting. And then there was an additional $2,000 I raised. And like that money went towards all the rewards that I promised people.
Yeah.
And my God, because like after you like do the thing, then you're like, oh, I have to do hundreds of framed, signed photographs.
I remember.
And it took me so long to do. And I was just like, it would be so easy just to not do this. So I understand on some level the ease of just ripping everybody off.
But you didn't do it.
I gave everybody their signed photograph.
You did the thing that you had to do. And that's, you know what? Being honorable is it's a struggle. I don't.
It's such a struggle.
But that's actually going to be the episode. That's everything. That was my face is. It'd be red if I was white because I've been laughing. So
it felt good. It felt good to laugh.
It was it was very cathartic. Thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much to the hysterical and wonderful Kurt Bonneler for joining me on today's episode. Be sure to check out his podcast, Bananas, from Exactly Right. And you can find a link to his new comedy special, Perfectly Stupid, on his website, kurtbonneler.com. As always, if you want to tell your story on The Juice, send them in by visiting teamcoco.com/heyjuice. Please remember to rate and review an Apple podcast. Give us all those brilliant stars. We do appreciate it. And thank you so much for listening. And as always, have a juicy day.
This has been a Team Coco production.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.